So thanks, everyone. I'm John O'Sullivan from Microsoft. Really appreciate everyone coming out today. Hopefully, we get some, this is a topic that gets some energy back in the room, get some of those carbs out of you, and look forward to presenting today. But also, hopefully, as we go through it, if there's opportunity for discussion, we're happy to kind of jump in and dive deeper. So what I want to do is today we're going to talk about rendering, which many of you know is a very well-understood compute-intensive workload. And some of the work that Jellyfish and Autodesk are doing with us in the cloud to ensure that we can, you can scale your workloads from your existing investment on-prem up to cloud-based elastic compute. And really want to have them share some of their experiences. And then provide the opportunity at the end of this for some discussion or interactive Q&A. So with me today on the panel are Jeremy Smith. He's the CTO of Jellyfish, and Daniel Totino from Autodesk, and Joel Slosh from our Azure team. So I'll let them, each of them, introduce themselves and give you a little bit of background on what they're doing in the space, and then we'll jump into some Q&A with them. So Jeremy?
Yeah, it's great to, oh, that's loud. It's great to be with you all here today in New York. And as I was saying, my name is Jeremy Smith. I am the CTO of a visual effects company in London called Jellyfish Pictures. And the whole cloud journey for us started a few years ago when we wanted a way of accessing additional resources when we needed them at the time without the risk of over-provisioning. So we've come a long way, basically, in the work that we've done. And it's really exciting to be here with you. But yeah, in addition to rendering, we're also looking at GPU options, virtualized workstations, and so forth.
And Daniel?
Yeah, hi. I've been with Autodesk for about 12 years and counting now, working on various different projects. But more recently, in the past couple of years, is where I've been product managing basically our cloud strategy for how do we work with partners, how do we offer solutions basically through the ecosystem that allow us to take our content creation tools, 3ds Max, Maya, and more recently, Arnold, which is our renderer solution, and basically make them scalable to the cloud and figure out solutions that way. Thanks.
And Joel?
A lot of you saw me earlier this morning. My name is Joel Slosh. I run media and compliance programs for Azure. And I work with partners and customers like Autodesk and Jellyfish to move cool workloads into the cloud. So that's what we are here to talk about.
So I guess why is now the time for people to focus on this, and what is the opportunity, and why do you think that it's opportunistic to think about rendering the cloud now as opposed to maybe 2 or 3 years ago? Where is the opportunity, and how is it fitting in today for you?
Speaking from a studio perspective, we're under a lot more pressure over the last while to deliver Ultra HD content compared to SD or HD or even 2K. So for us, it's a mammoth increase in the amount of renders we have to get out the door. And we looked at our office space in London, and I mean, London's a very, very cramped, tight city, and there's no way that we could just knock down another wall or take out another floor in central London. It's just cost prohibitive. And then there's the other aspect of that. We didn't want to be in the case where we're over-provisioning, then say if one specific job was going to be done. We didn't want to have that hardware kicking around after. So for us, we wanted to kind of converge onto a CapEx, but however, an OpEx way of doing that, then give us the freedom to change that fulcrum from a financial position when we can. So yeah, it's very exciting times.
And then how is Autodesk kind of fitting into this and supporting this, Daniel?
So I think there's a couple of points to bring up in that respect. So Autodesk itself has gone through a big business model transition, going from perpetual seats to subscription seats, where I think the idea there, especially in the media and entertainment industry, is kind of working through those peaks and valleys, giving people who have that steady stream the option to subscribe for a long time. But then there's a lot of burst scenarios where you're not just bursting your creative talent, you're bursting your capacity, like Jeremy and other studios in the same boat, going through that exact same type of flow. And the idea of partnering with Azure in this case and working through other cloud providers as well, I have to admit we're not uniquely partnered with Azure, guys, sorry. But the idea is the same. It's really just about giving the flexibility there. And it allowed us to rethink how we distribute and deliver our tools, I think is the key, versus this is not just a box product that you quite literally received on a DVD. How many computers have DVD drives today, right? There's a lot of things that have changed over the past few years, and the mindset for production has changed as well to go with that. And I think we're adapting along with the trends.
And Joel, maybe you could speak a little bit to, you know, why is security important? Obviously, I think everyone could explain why security is important, but how are we addressing some of the security concerns for these folks?
Yeah, so there's a couple of ways that we're looking at it. One is, working with standards organizations like MESA and CDSA to adapt, adapt things like the content protection standard to the cloud environment, and that requires, a slightly different way of thinking about how applications are deployed, the kinds of security, how do you adapt everything that you are familiar with in an enterprise context, or when you've got your own physical data center, to a world where you don't have the flashy lights and the cables to plug in, and you can't touch, you can't physically secure your stuff anymore. So it's all of the same concepts, but the approach is necessarily different when you're in the cloud. So working with the content holders like Jellyfish to create to create guidance that can be used more broadly in the industry, whether it's a major studio or whether it's a more generic guideline, that falls in line with things like what the MPAA mandate, looking at that from the cloud and application perspective allows us to design configurations, design tools, and provide the information that really that anybody can adopt, and to deploy infrastructure, whether it's client side tools or server capacity and storage, on a very broad scale. Jeremy knows all about how to spin up 10,000-20,000 cores for a single project, and then watch them go bye-bye when it's all done, and not have them sitting in his office.
So I guess that brings up a good point around, you mentioned that you do currently have an investment in hardware, and I'm sure that most of the folks in the room have some investment in hardware today if they're doing rendering. And we talked before about, this fact that the cloud does provide hybrid. So maybe you could describe how you're doing that today, what some of the components you're using from folks like Autodesk are, and what the value is there for you, and how you see that happening, how you see that kind of changing longer term.
Yeah, I mean, we started looking at this several years ago. We definitely wanted to have like a cloud ethos just built into the company. But we also had invested quite a large, substantial sum of money in on-prem infrastructure. And simply because we wanted to use the cloud did not mean we wanted to throw all of our stuff away. So that gave us a challenge on how we get the integration working. So we've primarily adopted all of a technology called software-defined storage. We're using coming from Pixit Media to do this. And essentially, we can extend our on-prem storage solution onto Azure. It's essentially treated like another shelf of disk, except that shelf of disk can grow beyond, very, very large. because of that deals with getting content up to the cloud, back to the cloud, and you can write certain policies within these new storage engines to allow that to happen. And on top of that, we spend a lot of time with, from a render perspective, a company called Royal Render, and we've got the Azure APIs built right into that. So say, for example, it's almost like a trigger. If there's, say, more than 200,000 frames left, it'll basically go spin up 200 VMs, for example. And so when the job is done, it'll simply class them down, destroy them, then all the data is basically drip-fed back onto our storage on-prem. So that's some of the technologies that we're doing, but there's obviously, more exciting stuff coming down the pipe from Autodesk and from Microsoft, that addresses this issue. I don't think on-prem hardware is going away anytime soon, but the days of over-provisioning, like buying like another 10 Dell Blade Centers to get one job out the door, and then having to just let them potentially sit there without guaranteed work, those days are over. And so we will likely have some on-prem hardware all the time, but I can't see us investing anymore in on-prem render. So that's some of the solutions that we're doing. Mm-hmm. So, and it's all, I mean, it's always a continual work in progress. I mean, it's just getting more and more refined as time goes on.
And then, you know, from a technology perspective, how are things like GPUs or newer technologies that you mentioned Microsoft is deploying, are you able to take advantage of that in the cloud? Or?
Yeah, we do GPU processing on the cloud. We did it 2 days ago, spun up a few thousand CUDA cores, did the job, shut it down, and happy days.
Awesome.
And then from an Autodesk perspective, is there anything you can share with us, Daniel, about how you're building out solutions with us on Azure?
Yeah, so definitely on the GPU side, I think Arnold is the renderer from the Solid Angle team that recently just joined the Autodesk team a little over a year ago, and definitely acknowledging that GPU rendering is big. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, it's a lot of architectural differences depending from the traditional final frame rendering that films go through with, you know, lots of CPU cores, lots of memory. But there's definitely a place for, you know, taking Arnold as a tool and bringing it over to the GPU architecture as well. And that was something which we've shown publicly last year at SIGGRAPH. Hopefully next week we'll have more to show as well in that respect. So I think there is just, you know, that's just enabling yet another demand, I think, is the key. Is we're going along the lines of where the industry is pointing us towards, essentially. And what Jeremy is saying echoes pretty widely amongst every segment of at least the customers we deal with at Autodesk. Everyone's going through those challenges. Everyone's thinking on-prem versus cloud. You know, there's very few studios, I'd say, that are 100% cloud, just because of that historical kind of industry, you know, cachet of seeing the blinking lights. That's the comfort almost, right? You want to walk into the machine room and see everything green and no beeping sounds and things like that. There's many studios and the mentality is it's been like that for decades, even before my time, I'd say. Another angle we're looking at has a lot to do with the production management side of it. So that's where our Shotgun production management solution, where, you know, it's managing who's doing what in the project, who's assigned to what task. How does that tie into the cloud? How does it help people make better production decisions to help say, when do you need to actually burst versus maybe it's good to keep it on-prem instead of, or, you know, spin your resources around as needed? Or how are you actually optimizing that use of the cloud for that given asset, whether that's a Maya scene or anything else that we'd be able to create. So I think that's some of the angles we're looking at.
Yeah, just to chime in. I think that's the beauty of running in a hybrid deployment is that you can change, as I was saying earlier, but you can change that position of what you want to run on-prem and what you want to go to the cloud. So say if for this job, you find, hey, we're more than, you know, we should be looking at doing this on-prem for whatever reason. You have that flexibility that, like, you're not locked in. So when we started this thing, we did not want to say, we didn't want to be 100% cloud or 100% on-prem, but we wanted to change, again, that fulcrum to whenever we want. And the same thing applies to GPUs, but also for virtualized workstations. So, I mean, we're using technology from Canadian companies called PC over IP, and we're delivering, like, virtual workstations to people from wherever, really. And so that is an issue, especially when you find that you're out of physical office space. You know, we let some people work from home. We spin them up a VM. We give them like an M60 or a K80 GPU. They can access it via a Zero client or the software version of that client on their home PC. And you get like pretty wicked performance, and they have the same resources that they would have in the office. So it's very, very exciting. So it's not just burstable render, burstable GPU compute, but it's also burstable workstations. So it's exciting and changing times.
Yeah, it sounds like it creates real value for customers and a real different dynamic in terms of the workplace and how people think about, you know, dispensing work or finding people to do certain jobs. You're no longer tied to a physical kind of location. You could, you know, have somebody working in their country home, if you will.
Yeah, no, potentially. I mean, and the other aspect is that, I mean, I personally know of companies that have over-provisioned for a specific job. And then once that job is done, there's no workload to come in to fill that infrastructure. So what I see some other companies doing is that they're basically taking on work they would rather not take just to pay for those infrastructure costs. Mm. And so all of a sudden, if a studio or a facility, if they want to turn away work, they have the flexibility of doing so, not just to keep like the finances in the black for that month. So it's a very, very interesting, because a studio could, or a facility could build a reputation on producing top-notch quality stuff. But they might have to take one or two mediocre jobs that say, well, we don't really want to do that, but hey, we've got all this electricity to pay for, so we better take it on. Because in one sense, if you have a blade center that's not doing there, or blade centers not doing there, sitting there doing nothing, it's almost like it's costing you money rather than making you money. Mm-hmm. And so you just, you know, when we took a look at all of this, all of these aspects, and we decided, yeah, no, we definitely need to do a hybrid solution for one of those reasons.
And then from a, you know, just a consumption-based software model in the cloud, how are you guys at Autodesk, you know, you mentioned this before, but how is the transformation of moving from sort of package product to consumption-based product working for you guys, and what are you seeing from an economics perspective?
It's going great. I'm not necessarily the finance guy to talk to you about that, but I think it, to my point earlier, it's about, I mean, aside from the revenue and all the adjustments that, you know, our typical auditors would have to go through, I think it's really about the peaks and the valleys, right? You know, if someone wants to turn off a license, they can turn it off. You know, and going, working with Azure and being able to offer things literally by the minute and by the hour is a game changer. And that's something which Autodesk currently does not do itself.
So, Jeremy, you've been on this journey for a few years, and it sounds like you've had some success and probably some challenges. You know, today, how easy do you think it is for customers to sort of look at this and think about, you know, taking these steps and moving forward, and what advice would you give them if they want to think about moving some of their rendering workloads to the cloud if they haven't experimented already?
Well, you definitely need to understand, I guess, what workloads you want to move to the cloud, and you need like a firm foundation of how your staff, on how the, what their pipeline, what their workflow is like. I think the biggest barrier to the cloud essentially was before was that, you know, you had to basically change the way that you work in order to take your workload to the cloud, but now that's no longer the case. And so that is, I think it's just basically understanding how to naturally extend your workflow to the cloud. So say, for example, I mean, when our artists submitted jobs, like an animator or a lighting TD, they just basically open up My HitSend, and they don't know where it renders. So we have a distributed physical render farm in London, but we also basically spin up some GPUs and CPUs in Amsterdam and Dublin, and you know, the frames just come back, and so they're like, yeah, this is great.
They just see the results. That
they just
need.
See the
they're
results.
Not,
that's
not,
right.
They're not too
yeah.
focused on
yeah.
the how, which is great.
Correct.
Right? That's what people want.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily care about how the machine works. Just get the content created.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
So where do you see? Where do you guys, maybe each of you, just see this technology going in the future? And you know, what are you looking forward to? Obviously, you guys, I think, all have some things next week that you're going to be revealing at SIGGRAPH. But without providing additional reveals here, you know, what do you see as next steps, or what are you looking forward to, or what do we as the platform provider need to give you?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure. I mean, I'm really, really excited about the future of how content is created. Like we're seeing in the UK, we actually do more work for people like Amazon and Netflix. You know, so people are consuming content via the cloud. Now, I think we're at a time where the way that content is created is massively changing, and I think more and more of this flexibility and agility is going to be built. Studios are going to have to adopt those models that support that, or else have a kind of question, you know, in 5 years' time from now, where are you going to be with, you know, and how are you going to compete against studios that are doing that if you don't get on it now? So I just, that's my gut feeling. I mean, this also was something I started looking into about 4 years ago. It's kind of turned into a Flowbomb passion. So that's why I've got to know these guys pretty well over the years, and, you know, I've done a few talks and everything else, but it's really exciting times.
Great.
Yeah, I think it was called on a little bit this morning, but I think collaboration basically is the big one. Was it this morning? Someone was saying, you know, someone taking the data on USB drives and running them across the street, or, you know, FedEx them across the country. You know, I think that kind of, I mean, I'm sure that's been going on. You know, that model is not necessarily the in play today as much as it was, say, 10 years ago. But the idea of not having to move the data, period, I think is exciting in that respect. And how do you bring people on board into projects? And how do we enable that fundamentally? So, you know, there's use cases today where people are working from home because, you know, the company's offering people more work-life balance. They could still be creatives working at home on a very secure connection, tying into that data center, tying into that cloud environment where they have their workstations. It's very secure. There's nothing that can get off of that home interface, basically. And more and more studios are kind of opening up to that idea of just, you know, where do you find the talent? How do you bring the talent on board? Not everyone can relocate. Not everyone can be where, you know, the studio head office is, for example. So I think that's more along the lines of the trend where I see just opening up and enabling, you know, more cross-studio collaboration, freelancers, you name it. Just, yeah.
Gives the best creative experience anywhere at any time. It's kind of the, you know.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. I think it's, you know, you need talents. You need the, you know, you don't want to have where your technology sits be the blocker to getting that person on board.
And then Joel, from a security perspective, you know, how are we kind of, you know, obviously most of the things these guys are working on are for, you know, movies or TV shows that maybe they don't want the reveals out before. They don't want any leaks. They don't want, you know, how are we kind of helping them make sure that this all stays secure?
Yeah, definitely leaks are bad. And, you know, just to echo what
I think you had a panel on that this morning.
Yeah. you know, to echo what Jeremy and Daniel have said, that, you know, our job as the platform provider is to enable those kinds of things securely. And, you know, the interest that we have is to provide that environment where, you know, these kinds of workflows can be configured and then used from anywhere by anyone, you know, as long as it's somebody who's authorized to be there. And so we're going to continue, you know, building those underlying systems that allow, you know, allow artists, allow producers, you know, whoever it is, to, you know, to be able to collaborate, to work from anywhere, and do so in a very secure way. And you know, we're developing more guidance on how to do that, and more automation that will enable, you know, enable vendors and partners to create those kinds of environments without, you know, without having to have somebody with a PhD in computer science to be on staff and do it for you.
And do you think we're, you know, sufficiently, you know, mitigating the risk around that? And how do you think most of our customers are kind of feeling about that, feeling about moving to the cloud, and, you know, is now the time?
Well,
outside of Jeremy, of course. Yeah.
We're, you know, I think we are, you know, finally starting to see that shift happen. It's been growing over the last few years, and, you know, and some innovators like, you know, like Jellyfish that have been willing to take that plunge early on. But, you know, as these tools, you know, as these tools develop, there's, you know, there's, it snowballs because the more content that gets created, the more people want. And as the technologies for viewing that content improve, so, you know, 4K, 8K, you know, VR, whatever it happens to be, you know, there's going to be more and more need for the capacity to create it, and doing it, you know, doing it without leaking it is
part of the solution.
Part of the solution. Yeah.
So one of the things we wanted to do is just open it up, you know, for questions. But also, you know, when we were going through this, Jeremy said you wanted to kind of challenge the audience and ask, you know, can people not afford to do this today, and or in the near future? And, you know, what do you see as the barriers? And, you know, if you guys want to give any interactive feedback, or, you know, what does it, you know, how can you afford not to do a cloud-based deployment, I guess is the question. So anyone?
Oh, here we go.
Anyone? Bueller?
No. So in response to that, like, who can't do it, how do you guys see the engineering groups and the people that you would require to build these kinds of processes and things happening in your company, and where do you find them, and what are those kinds of people look like, and, like, what kind of product path do you see forward where it makes it easier and simpler for folks to enable the cloud, I guess?
I can kind of tackle that a little bit. I guess, you know, more and more we're challenging, at least, you know, speaking from the software developer side, we're challenging a lot of our, you know, core engineers to be a little bit more cross-disciplinary. Like, don't get so fixed on a project, on a product. Look at it as a project, and how you can take your knowledge from a certain product and apply it to something like a cloud workflow. That means learning a whole new tool set. You know, the idea of containerization, for example, was, you know, completely foreign to us a couple of years ago. Now it's becoming, you know, design your products to run within a container. Regardless of if we're actually going to put it in a container or not and ship it to someone, we want to make sure that we enable that for people who want to bring, you know, we call it the do-it-yourself cloud, right? A lot of the studios just go to the cloud platforms, they rent the space, they bring the software, they bring their tools and everything. So I think making sure that we keep that mindset in mind that no matter what we do, there is a cloud opportunity for it in the future.
Got another question?
Joel, this one's at you. I'm wondering if you feel like your acquisition of Green Button a little while back helped you guys in your understanding of the whole field. I don't know if you dealt with that. They originally came out of Weta Digital and did some of the original work out there with along with a company called Render Rocket and another one that was a big one.
No, I think you're absolutely right that Green Button, which then became Azure Batch, has been a pivotal part to enabling these kinds of workflows because you know you need to be able to orchestrate the operation of you know tens of thousands of cores and tens of thousands of VMs. Without that ability, then it gets very tricky to try to manually provision that many machines and manage their operation and you know manage all of the assets that have to flow between them. So I think that's. That was probably one of the biggest key enablers, and you add that to the scale that's available, you know, with cloud-based storage and the compute capabilities, and you know that opens up the whole world of rendering and even beyond you know rendering in this particular industry, but to just big compute in general. Anything where there is that batch-based approach of submitting a job and you know waiting for results to come back.
Here we go.
My question is, when you're doing everything in-house, you feel like you have full control. And when you're doing it somewhere else, you're losing this feeling. Can you collaborate on this?
Sorry, just to clarify, you feel like you're in control when you're using the cloud?
No, I am in control when I'm doing everything in-house.
Right. Yes. In regards to control, I mean, we have every VM that we spin up, every job that we can do, every process that we run, we can control that. We've taken the Azure APIs and built them into the solutions that we have on premise. Now, while, say for example, I mean, I can't like go plug a like a physically plug a Blade Center in, but on the other hand, I don't mind giving up that level of control to Microsoft really. But I've never felt like that we don't have absolute control access to everything that's in our Azure subscription.
And it feels like part of the flip side of that question is not just, you know, how do you deal with that inability to touch your server rack and feel in control, but if you don't have control, who does? You know, is there a hacker at the other end, or you know, is it Microsoft that has control of my resources? You know, and I can say unequivocally, no. You know, we do not have control of your resources. We're only responsible for what lies beneath it. You know, the control that you have, that you feel over your virtual environment, is going to be achieved through the processes and the policies that you put in place in your environment. So, by setting encryption, by setting network policies, by enforcing access controls on your assets. You know, those are the things that give you that control back, because really, you know, when you've got the server sitting in your location, the only control that you really have beyond, you know, those virtual controls is the fact that the machine is sitting there. It's harder, you know, at least, you know, for your physical security person to visualize somebody coming in and pulling a drive out of a rack. But that's not going to happen in one of our data centers either. So a lot of, you know, particularly smaller organizations find that their security posture is better running in the cloud than their on-premise system. You know, and that goes for very, very large studios. You know, we saw a couple years ago what happened to that. And, you know, even, you know, smaller organizations like, you know, with post houses and dubbing facilities where they had all the physical control and it was a false sense of security. So it's really in how you deal with it that's going to give you that sense back.
Yeah, I'll just add one last thing. I mean, when using like the cloud, you can run like IIS, so basically infrastructure as a service. So basically all of the controls that you just spoke about that Azure offers, you can actually put your own level of additional security on top of that as well if you want to. If you're not satisfied with the Azure controls that you have, that they provide, you could throw your own third-party solutions on there as well. So it's kind of like, you know, double skinning firewalls, essentially. It's like you could.
Well, and some of that is actually mandated in the best practices guidance that comes from CDSA or MPAA, studio specific requirements where, you have to implement, a certain level of control that's, in the platform. But then it also says, no, you also need to put a VPN. You also need, a third party application firewall. You need, blah, 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 depending on what it is that you're doing. So it's absolutely right that you don't just rely on what's in the platform. It's your environment, it's your controls, and you have to take ownership of it.
We have another question over here.
Hi. Once you get past the MPAA security and the not on-prem phobia, and you're working with people work from anywhere, want to work from anywhere, you still have to deal with bandwidth constraints and other things. And I'm curious what suggestions you have for productivity on the final frames, compositing, transcoding, those heavier processing where getting the data back and forth is a big hit.
Yeah, so that's a very good question. So we've invested, like as I alluded to earlier, quite heavily in a software-defined storage solution. That really, really helps negate the need for all that additional bandwidth. We use a company called Pixit Media, and they're based in the UK, and they offer a very, very good solid software-defined caching, a software-defined storage solution. So I'll give you an example. When we, say spin up 1,000 cores for rendering a job over however many VMs, the data gets pulled once to the cloud. And basically, then it sits in the cloud. And then the other 999 cores, they will basically pull from that cached instance. So all of a sudden, my bandwidth requirements fall through the floor. We've spun up, I think it was 7,000 cores, and we did that over a 500 meg link. So,
wow.
Yeah, which is, now if you take the caching, you'd be like, oh, yeah, I'll have a 20 gig pipe to the cloud. You know what I mean? And, at that point, it's like, well, it might be cheaper to knock down a wall, buy some blade centers. But no,
not that we want to stop anyone from getting a 20 gig.
I'm sure. But we do this off, that's the sort of bandwidth that we're talking about then when we use. When using PC over IP session, PC over IP for virtualized workstation, you can target basically different workloads for different profiles. But however, when you have people working remotely, Azure takes care of that bandwidth for you. Obviously, you pay for the bandwidth that you use at the time, but when you're done, you just shut down the session and your consumption is over. So yeah, no, the caching is very good.
We've got a couple questions over here.
I just wanted to respond to the challenge question to the audience, and I guess maybe wrap it up into a question. So I'm an intern and I'm also a college student, and when I take 3D classes, we'll use Cinema 4D, but they did have a render farm that was really buggy. But I was wondering how do educational institutions take advantage of this? Because I feel students, they can't really afford the top quality hardware, and something like a render farm is really useful. So I was just curious as to I feel like educational institutions could take advantage of that.
So we should chat afterwards, because Microsoft does have an educational outreach program, and you could, for most universities, we have a program in place where you can get access to Azure at fairly low cost. So yeah.
And to cover that from the Autodesk side, we give all of our educational institutions software for free to the schools and to the students, and that includes Arnold as well for rendering. But the hardware it runs on, that's totally up to the school. So yeah, for your student projects, by all means, you could render away if you have get your friends together, link your laptops up together, and create your own render farm, or like you mentioned, to go to Azure, or encourage your sysadmin to go to Azure.
So we have a program called DreamSpark. You can just go online, type Microsoft DreamSpark, and it's a program for universities to get access to Azure. So go check it out.
Yeah, would someone speak a bit more about, I don't know if it's the onboarding or from the perspective of, say, the creatives, when you've got two or three rendering special effects in their home, and I like the idea of my company trying to work with them in the cloud as opposed to more insecurely as might be done now. But can you speak to what it's like from their perspective to approach this sort of new workflow?
Yeah. So I guess just to qualify, so you're saying I'm a creative, you send me a note saying, hey, I have this job for you to do, you know, access this workstation, and you know, from your Mac or your PC or your home computer, and that's the scenario. What's it like for them? What's their experience?
About how that workflow is happening anymore. I probably do say this is something new we use.
Okay.
I'm just wondering what the experience has been from their perspective of getting that kind of,
more than happy to chat about that. So, I mean, I'm doing a presentation after, but one thing that I'll talk about is that we've expanded in London, and we've set up a new office where we have no computers at all, nothing. So we have a bunch of zero clients. It's being powered by Teradici via PC over IP. And after doing some configuring and everything else, this is people running Maya, Nuke, After Effects, Cinema 4D, GPU render, CPU render, like the whole bumper to bumper solution, and the performance that they're getting out of those zero clients is better than the old desktop that they had sitting under their desk when they moved. And the thing, you know, and if you're using Azure VMs, the machines never break. If you need another video card or more RAM, you shut the VM down, you literally take a slider bar and resize the VM, power it up, and all of a sudden, oh, I've got double the core count for this job. Now let me resize again when I'm done. And from a user's perspective, so if you're going to allow people to work from home, the only thing you have to really think about is the only bottleneck really is how much bandwidth do they have going into their house. At that point, we can't control that. But however, we can make PC over IP templates to best fit their workload. So I'll give you an example. If you're a compositor, you may be more interested in color depth rather than frame rate. But if you're an animator, you may be more interested in frame rate than color depth. So you can target that. But one thing, like in the UK, there's a mandate from the government to invest more into broadband outside of London, because they know there's an issue. There's nowhere else to go in London. I mean, the power grid is maxed out and everything else. So they're looking for ways to get people to do that. But from a user experience, I've been told that using the PC over IP with the machines on the back end that we're using, which can be a VM or physical card, that is actually better than what they were getting before. So I don't really get a lot of complaints about it, and that makes me happy. But we have spent a lot of time, investing in making sure that a user experience was great. So because if it's not good, you know, that leads to unhappy artists, unhappy people, and therefore a lower quality work. So we set out with the goal of making it like absolutely, it's got to be bang on, indistinguishable from a real machine. And we believe, we have done that. And in many instances, they're getting better for performance than they would when they replaced their older workstation. So, no worries.
I think that's all the time we have, gentlemen. But thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks, everyone.
John, Joel, Jeremy, Daniel. Let's give them a big round of applause.